It's good to see you. I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by Jesus. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse, addiction to food, work, and control, and I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. You didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you. This has been a great week.
Yeah.
I've been through some, I don't know, just a downtime for like a couple months, stressed at the wazoo, and just, I don't know what the problem was. I'm still kind of trying to let that simmer and figure that out. But this last week has been super cool and good, and so got to spend some time last night in a tree stand, and that's good medicine. So that leads, that was a segue. Y'all know what a segue is. It leads right into the lesson. I wanted you to think for a half a second that I know what I'm talking about. We're going to talk about self-care, and sitting in a tree stand is about all I know about self-care. I do not know very much about self-care. If you ask Loretta, she would verify this. Our father had two or dead stop. There was no moderation. And that's what I grew up with. If you're going to be a good man, you work until you can't work anymore, then you fall over and pass out. And then when you get up from being passed out, you eat a meal, take a shower, and get right back at it and go till you pass out again. There is no in between, just two gears in your transmission, super go and stop. That is not good self-care. That sucks. It's terrible self-care. So I've got people, literally people in this room here, who are starting now to put a finger in my back and say, dude, are you taking care of yourself? How about your eating? My eating is better. Appreciate that. Eating is better. I've lost a little bit of weight, taken up notches on the old belt. But that's not all it is. Just to eat less is not the sum total of self-care. So what I'm going to say tonight is what I've heard, not what I practice. I may invite you to chime in and give me some help here and there, because I really don't know what I'm talking about. I don't. Personally, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I've just heard it from people and read it in books and heard it in classes and that kind of thing. So we're going to use the same analogy that we've used over and over. If you have owned an older vehicle, now we're talking generations, you know, I'm a baby boomer, then there's Gen X, and then there's millennials, and then there's, you know, who knows what's coming next. But I'm a baby boomer, and we drove vehicles back in the day that had carburetors. Has anybody ever heard of a carburetor? Which tire is a half an ounce low, and, you know, all that stuff. We had what they called idiot lights, you know, and when your car overheated, they'd tell you, hey, your car overheated. Thanks for telling me that. You know, I'm 20 miles from a gas station, but now I know my car's overheated. Thanks for telling me that. And the smoke coming out from under the hood is another. But they had idiot lights, you know, that would tell you almost after it was too late. And to me, I never did get that. I never did understand what good they were, but I guess whatever. But now we have gauges that tell you, you can see things inching up, you know. You're getting close to being overheated. You're getting close to being out of gas. You've got a tire that's just a smidgen low. You might need to inflate it. You know, you got gauges that tell you all this stuff. And some people are born with gauges. I envy you. Some people know they can read themselves. They know their bodies, their spirits. And I know you could be trained to do this. And I've just never cared enough to be trained. That shows you how little I care about self-care. I was not brought up in the school of taking care of yourself, so I don't want to go to that class. But you can be trained in that. Some people are born with that instinct to kind of know where they're at. So they don't have an idiot light. They've got gauges, little gauges. It's about time for me to do this or that. All I got's an idiot light. What's that say about me? You know, that's all I've got in my hard wiring. So I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about just knowing ourselves. And you don't know how stupid I feel standing up here. When I was working on this lesson this week, I thought, really? You're really going to stand up there and try to teach this lesson? So I feel, shouldn't even confess this. Wayne's never had these dreams. All through my years of pastorate, I used to dream that I would get up and preach in my underwear. And you know what? Nobody noticed. I don't know what that says. The therapist in the room, help me figure that out. I don't know. I don't know what that says about me. Do what? Oh, they're all asleep. There you go. That explains it. But this kind of feels like that. I'm getting up and I think, I'm in my underwear. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm unqualified to share this. So you can throw something. You can throw up a hand. You can yell and say, no, that's not it at any point. And you're totally invited to do that. So what I think I'm kind of on track here, that I've separated this up into four things. We're emotional beings, we're mental beings, we're physical beings, and we're spiritual beings. So just for sake of discussion, let's go at it that way. First of all, let's just talk about our emotions. And I had a few insights on this. I kind of know about emotions because that's what we do here. So I kind of feel that's why I put them first, because I kind of understand emotions. I kind of get them a little bit. We're emotional beings, and I don't care how stoical we may try to put on that we are, that we try to make people think, no, I'm not an emotional being. We're all emotional beings. Sorry, we are. Being stoical is actually kind of an emotional expression. So we're emotional beings, and when our emotions kind of get out off center or out of whack, or they kind of go rogue on us, I think that Pathway has taught us more than anything, more than I've learned anywhere else. Pathway has taught us that we need to talk about that. If we have anger, if we have fear, if we have depression, whatever, it's not a healthy thing to keep that inside, that we need to get that out and talk about it. And now think about conversations you've had with people in Pathway. Some people will begin to tell you how they feel, and they never stop. They go on and on and on, and it's the same thing over and over and over again. And you try to like steer them a certain direction or get them to stop and think, do you hear what you're saying here? You've already said it 15 times. I've got that part. Can we stop and just explore that? And they just keep going on and on and on about they feel this way, they feel this way, and he said that to me, and it made me feel so terrible, and they go on and on and on and on and on. I would call that kind of obsession, wouldn't you? You're obsessing over this feeling, and I thought, so why do sometimes we do that? And in my case, the reason I obsess over some bad feeling or some rogue feeling or a feeling that's kind of gone on its own, it's because I'm concentrating on the other person. I'm concentrating on what they did and what they said, and it's their fault. And if that would change out there, you know. And we obsess because deep down inside we know there's not a thing we can do about it. So we just keep talking about it. And the light needs to go on. You can't do anything about it. You can't change that. You can't obsess over somebody else that say, this is how I'm wondering why I feel this way. And I want to explore my feelings. And I want to understand why there were five other people in the room and it didn't push any of their buttons, but it really pushed my buttons. I want to understand that about me. And I rant over the conversations, at least in myself, don't lead to obsession, like a 15-minute rant over the same thing over and over and over. But they lead to healing. They lead to self-discovery and healing. So if we're emotional beings and we're trying to take care of our emotions that seem to be off-center or gone rogue on us, maybe that would help. Maybe that would help to think, why am I not getting relief from this emotion? Is it possibly because all I'm talking about and thinking about is the other person or the circumstance or the, you know, something out there, instead of thinking about me and discovering why I feel what I feel. Is it cowardly? If you're in an emotionally packed situation, is it cowardly to bail from time to time? I used to really think it was. I used to think you're just a coward. You're not willing to sit there and talk it out. To leave would be very cowardly. It would be a chicken thing to do. That's not right, is it? I mean, I'm more and more realizing you might need to come back to this, but for now it might be good just to step out of this. It's loaded. It's basically turned into a shouting match or a grudge match, and there's no objectivity in the situation. It's better to step out for a while and to think. Well, it's not the same as abandoning. I think that's why I didn't want to. You're a bad accused of abandoning that person. You're a bad friend. You're a bad husband. You're a bad so-and-so because you walked out. And so this week I thought about that, and I thought, well, maybe walking out, we need to realize I'm taking a vacation. I'm not moving. I'm just edging out for a little bit. Anybody got anything to say on that? Yeah. Everybody hear what she said? Yeah. Y'all may say, duh, why didn't you know this? But this is kind of new to me to think, because loyalty was real big in our family, and courage, you know, tough it up, be tough was big in our family. So to walk away for a little while is like to be cowardly or to be disloyal some way. And that's not true. Well, we're emotional beings, and we're also mental beings. We have brains that can process things. We have brains that can create things, that can design things, that can dream things. And I got to thinking this week, there's a difference. I love to think. Do you? I mean, most people like to think.
Yeah.
Okay. Some don't, but which is obvious. No.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't hear that, Sally. Sally said it gets her in trouble when she thinks. But most of us like to think on some level or another. We enjoy thinking. And I got to thinking, what if we put these labels on thinking? What if we said there is vocational thinking and then there's vacational thinking? What if we allowed ourselves to put thinking in those two categories, to where we say, I need a break. And now I need to do some vacational thinking. Because you might, I'm going to pick on Greg for a minute. Greg works with steel where he works. And he works with great big pieces of steel. And he picks them up and puts them down and he paints them and everything. That's vocational work to him. But I'll bet you a dime to a donut, sometimes when he goes home, he goes out in his garage and he picks up a piece of steel and he paints it. And he bends it, and he does stuff, and that's not vocational thinking. That's vacational thinking. Unless Lorna told him he had to do it. So that was a bad example then, sorry. But do you know what I'm talking about? That you can go home from doing a bunch of vocational thinking and go right outside and do some really hard work. And yet it doesn't seem like hard work. It's vacational thinking. You may want to paint a room or get into some sort of building project or get into some sort of fixing project or creating project or, you know, whatever it is you're doing. And you're working just as hard. You may be sweating just as hard, breathing just as hard, but there's something different going on because it's vacational thinking. You're still creating. You're still designing, you're still dreaming, you're still processing information, but it's not the same thing. Am I close to any truth here? It just makes sense to me. Go ahead, Tina. Yeah. Anybody else have some thoughts on that? Sometimes words that got really close together, like vocational and vocational, that's like, in my little pea brain, it's like, okay, now that helps me. That's two little boxes sitting right next to each other. And what am I going to do? Where, you know, am I going to be in this box or this box? I don't know. I think Dad came up with this term. Do you remember this, Loretta? I think Dad came up with this term a long time ago, that a lot of us suffer from the tyranny, everybody knows what that word means. We suffer from the tyranny of the oughts. I ought to be doing this. I ought to be doing that. I should have. I could have. You know, the tyranny of the oughts. And that term has always meant something to me. That I suffer from the tyranny of the oughts. You ought to. You ought to. You ought to. That's vocational thinking, not really, maybe that shouldn't even be vocational thinking. I don't know. All right, we're physical beings, and we're either hurting our body or we're healing it. We're born to die. This is the one part of us that is temporary. You know, I don't think our emotions or our mind or spirits die. I think those all live, but our bodies die. So that makes this a tricky thing to do. You know, you exercise too much and you hurt yourself. You exercise too little and you hurt yourself. You eat too much and you hurt yourself. You eat too little and you hurt yourself. And they like to say this much exercise per week is perfect for so-and-so. Is that across the board for everybody? What about people who can't exercise? You know? So the physical thing, wow. Has anybody figured out a balance yet? Say that again.
Being unhealthy is hard. Getting healthy is hard. You have to pick your hard.
Being unhealthy is hard, and getting healthy is hard, and you have to pick which hard you want. Thank you. Now I feel joyous and that is true though. And the other problem is there's some white and gray hair going on in this room. And there's some no hair going on in this room, which indicates some of us are aging. And you can't go out and do what you used to go out and do. You know? It ain't happening. Can I get a witness? We get very weak. Just as I can get it. So, I mean, it's. I don't know that there's an answer for this physical thing, but I do know that we're spirits who live. We're mental. We're thinking, feeling spirits who live in a physical vessel, and this physical vessel is troublesome. It's challenging. And vice versa. Yeah. So it's all, we're intertwined. I really am a little suspicious of people who want to talk about us as if we're fragmented beings. It's all united. One thing always affects the other. There's no, you know, and if you concentrate on just one thing, it'll always be at the expense of the others. So, you know, you have to kind of deal with all of it. We're not having a whole lot of wisdom going on here tonight, are we? You have to pick your heart. Really? I don't like it at all, but it's true. It is true. So, and then the last one is we're spiritual beings. Here's the health that I have found spiritually. I'm just going to share my own discovery, and you go with whatever you want. Because I think I've found a bit of spiritual healing. I've not arrived at any place, but I've found a degree of spiritual healing, and I want to share that with you. I used to spend most of my time trying to figure out what God did and didn't do. God did that. God did not do that. If something good happened or bad happened, It was either God rewarding me or God punishing me. And I was always trying to decide, what is God doing and why is he doing it? And I was always trying to figure out, how do I play in this game, this ping pong match with God? This back and forth thing of rewards and punishments and God doing this and God doing that. And the other one was, God, what do you want me to do? God, tell me your will. How many guys here, be honest, how many guys here in years gone by have stood on a free throw line and say, God, if you want me to marry that woman, I'll make this free throw? Nobody else has done that? Nope. Okay, how many have had, that's, nobody wants to fess up. Okay, I've never done that. But how many of us have done, you know, crazy stuff to try to know God's will? And that means, you know, just silly, okay, if this next red car passes me, then that means that you want me to take that new job. Or just. There you go. Yeah, whatever that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that one, if you all hear that one, you know, you slit your. Yeah. And so you heard the joke on that one, haven't you? Where you falls open and you put your finger down. It says, Judas went out and hung himself. Yeah, and you think, no. So you open it up again and you put your finger down, go down, do likewise. And he said, no. So you open it up again and whatsoever thou doest, doest it quickly. I mean, you know, really? So, yeah, but I've done that kind of stuff before. Just kind of let it flop open and, you know. And then after a while, you learn how to really do good stuff with gem clips and paper clips. So it falls open, it, you know, where you want it to. It's like, oh, yeah. The land is mine, you know. Milk and honey, it's mine. And so you can jockey that around every which way. But trying to figure God out is an exercise in futility. It's just really silly to try to think that we, as mortals, can figure God out. What he's doing, why he's doing it, when he's going to do it, why didn't he do it? You know, how's he going to do it? Really? But that, I spent years obsessing over that and wondering why I was so unhealthy spiritually. And it affected everything. Emotions, when you think God's against you, that's a downer. That's pretty hard to get over with. When you think God's against you. And I spent years thinking God was not my ally, but my enemy. So I lived in a lot of misery and shot a lot of free throws and missed a lot. It was not a good thing. So, yeah. Wet orchard. I think that in order to understand what Gideon did, you have to know the whole story of Gideon. And the last time I studied that story, I had to preach on it at Wayne's church. Wayne asked me to preach on it, and I said, thank you so much for laying. He told me what I was supposed to preach on, so I studied the, yeah, that's what good friends are for. Yeah. So I studied it, and we need to have a conversation about it, because it was a lengthy discovery on my part, and I don't look at fleeces the same way I used to look at fleeces. Because that story is about something bigger. We've taken what Gideon did as a pattern, but when I studied it, I realized, I really would love to talk about it. Oh, yeah, a lot of people talk about fleeces, lay out a fleece. Everybody know what we're talking about? You know, if it comes back wet, God's with us. If it comes back dry, he's not. You know, a piece of wool from a sheep. And Gideon did that, laid it out overnight, and said, okay, in the morning when I get up, if the fleece is, I guess, wet, the ground around it's dry, then you're with me. And it was. Then the next morning, he said, okay, what if the fleece is the other way around? And it was. And so it's like, okay, God, I know you're with me. And so we take it, okay, that's a pattern that we should replicate. And that's not where I fall anymore. But you can fall there if you want, but I don't. Trying to figure God out is an exercise in futility. But when it finally sunk into me that God really loves me, that became enough for me. And so I learned to rest in a God that I couldn't figure out. I thought, I can trust this God, and I don't have to have him figured out in order to trust him. I don't need to know what his next move is to know that I trust him. And when you're waiting on the results of a test, a medical test, where they are suspecting cancer, or when you're waiting on word from a loved one who you can't get in touch with and you think, I've got to hear from them, or you're waiting on some relationship to be reconciled or whatever, and what you want more than anything is for God to send you a sticky note and say, this is the way it's going to turn out. As soon as you get that sticky note, there's no trust involved. As soon as you get that sticky note, you've got God in your pocket. I got the sticky note. I don't have to trust. You know? I trust this. I love you, and that's all I'm going to tell you, is that I love you. And you let me decide what that's going to look like. And if I love you, it's going to be the best. It's going to be the richest, most beautiful, the deepest, most transforming thing ever. But you just have to trust that I love you. And don't put, remember last week you talked about hoops, where we hold up hoops and we want God to jump through the hoops. You know, that's not trust. So to me, to come to the place where I just thought, I'm going to trust, I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't need to know what's going to happen. I just know who God is, and I know I trust him. And I know how he feels about me, and I'm going to let that be good enough for me. And buddy, I still have a lot of hitches in that plan, but that's where I want to stay on that road, because that one works for me. So we're emotional beings, we're mental beings, we're physical beings, and we're spiritual beings. And all of these are intertwined. And if one goes bad, they all kind of go bad. So what are we going to do about this? How do we take care of ourselves? I can't believe I'm even saying this, because I am the least methodological person ever. I'd rather sit on a stump and think about the meaning of life than tell you a plan. Maybe that's why I suck at self-care, because I have no plan. What is that? Fail to plan. Fail to plan, plan to fail. That's me. I'm the poster child. I started to have a plan for this. I really have. And this is my plan. My plan is to throw myself on the wisdom and the care of those I trust. I have a certain number of people in my life now who I really, really trust. When they speak, I listen. And I listen carefully. And I do what they say. Whether I like it or not, I do what they say. This is not the old me, but that's what I do. I don't know if that's the way you'd want to go. Some people are researchers. Some people like to read books and go to programs and seminars and websites, and they like to research, and that's where you find your guidelines for self-help. That's not how I would do it, but there are some people who get a lot of help doing that. And you might be a person who just simply leans toward common sense and instinct. Just kind of follow your gut. To a lot of people, that works. And a lot of things I do, that's my mode of operation. Self-care, if I try that, I'll fail every time. That's why I have to enlist other people to speak. Okay, so here's the last thing. I've gone way too long-winded tonight. I think this needs to be said, though, at the end of this. And I don't have an explanation for it, and I don't have a, maybe it should be a whole other lesson someday, I don't know. But I think we need to learn to distinguish between self-care, which we could call maintenance. In the classic old 12 steps, maintenance steps are like the last three steps. You've done the really hard work of recovery, and now you're maintaining health and sobriety and good living. And so I think there's a difference between self-care, which is maintenance, and wound care, which is recovery. There's a difference there. When you're feeling things, I think it's important to ask for help and talk it out. Are these emotions going rogue because I'm tired and I haven't taken care of myself? Or are these feelings going rogue because it's an old wound that needs some recovery attention? That may sound like you're splitting frog hairs, but I think it's an important distinction to make, and maybe it's a something for a whole other discussion. I don't know. So I'm glad this lesson's over, because I don't think I did a very good job. I think we helped each other out. Let's talk to each other. Want to hang around afterwards and talk about it, or if you want to talk about it over coffee, with grab somebody and say, this week could we meet over coffee or whatever and talk about this? Because I think if we go, myself, if I go into this alone, I'm in trouble. I think it's really important to have people who you sit down and you say, how do you do self-care? How do you take care of yourself? How do you know when it's time to rest? How do you know when it's time to step out of the game for a minute or two? And I think these help, these happen good in small conversations. You can hang around and talk afterwards. You can, you know, meet during the week. But I think that's a healthy thing to do. Nami?